conversation that you're about to hear with John Morrison brought me back to a vivid memory from a tour I was leading in the fields of Bethlehem in Israel. Right there in the cradle of biblical history, I witnessed an extraordinary scene. As we're watching the fields and we're telling the story of Luke 2, I see one Bedouin shepherd who leads his flock of sheep right into the area where another shepherd was already at with his flock. And I watched this scene with intrigue and curiosity. A little bit of my camp counselor days come back as I'm trying to like figure out, how are they gonna sort everybody out? How would they figure out how to separate their sheep afterwards? And 10 minutes later, one shepherd starts yelling out and his sheep perk up and they start following, while the other shepherd was doing the same. And it was then and there it really clicked for the very first time. The sheep hear my voice. Our conversation with John Morrison echoes that same story. This idea of coming out of ministry, but not driven by panic and where am I going to go, but really just trusting in the Good Shepherd, waiting for his voice and following his call to the next pasture. We pray that this episode would guide you, that you would not be in a place of panic. If you are, that this would bring you a sense of peace. This is an episode you're not going to want to miss. This is the Life After Ministry podcast. Hey, I'm here with John Morrison. John, you are up in Canada, another Canadian on the program. Good to have you here. Thanks for coming.
My pleasure, Matt. And it's great to be able to talk to this group of people that I connect with so well. So, yeah. You know, it seems like there's a lot of pastors in Canada, too, that are figuring stuff out. So I'm happy to join their voice. And let's see how the conversation goes today.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things we have in common. We have both gone to the Biola Talbot area of the world for ministry and for training. We are both Story Brand guides. And putting the word out there, which is great. It's part of our story of life after ministry. But before we get into some of that, let's talk about your life going into ministry. How did all of that get started for you?
Yeah, I felt the call of God on my life personally quite early. So he spared me from a lot of the teenage rebellion stuff. You know, it was probably a week where I really was like, I'm done with this stuff. And I was probably just mad about something, or maybe it was teenage hormones, but I walked away for about a week, and thankfully you can't get into too much trouble, but you know, God still saved me early, which I'm forever grateful, and felt the call to ministry. Probably I always knew that this was a path for me. People would affirm that, you know, I was the kid in youth group that was always asked to give testimonials after conferences and missions trips and stuff like that. So I kind of knew I had, like, God had given me a particular set of skills for ministry, but it wasn't until my last game of I was playing junior hockey. You know, I had a dream to play pro, as many Canadians do, but it wasn't for me. God called me to ministry. I think after my last game of junior, I was just like, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. And I don't want to study just anything. I want to study the Bible, and I want to probably pursue this thing about how God gets a hold of people and be a part of that. And so I quit hockey, sold all my goalie equipment, and went to the frozen tundra of Saskatchewan in Canada. And there was a school there called Canadian Bible College. Went to seminary for 4 years, got a Bachelor of Theology, which is like, took Greek. Well, I never would have thought, you know, anybody watching me growing up would never say, this kid is going to be a candidate for learning Greek. But I loved it. And yeah, came home and started being a youth pastor, just pursuing that that call that I felt on my life.
So you go into ministry and loving it, feeling the calling. And we're going to skip through, I'm sure, lots of the different parts of story of you're working with youth and you have lots of fulfilling moments. But what was the catalyst that brought you out of ministry?
Yeah, I mean, we have to probably fast track a lot. I went through a season of doubt, so I had to learn apologetics at the, you know, because when you're a youth pastor out here in Vancouver, it's the great pagan north, as my friend Craig Hazen calls it. And so, you know, you're not dealing with kids that are a lot of church kids. You're dealing with them and their friends that, you know, have no idea about who Jesus is. So my apologetics training was right after that, and came back and got into apologetics after I, you know, stepped away from youth ministry, got trained, and then went into just a small season of being a teaching pastor. And so I think when you're in apologetics, many people are very entrepreneurial. I probably was more entrepreneurial than I even would admit at the time. Grew up in a family of entrepreneurs. No one in my family ever earned a paycheck. I was the first one in ministry to get like a regular paycheck. And so I just always thought, like, I must not be entrepreneurial because I'm in ministry. And so I think when people talk to me now, many years later, they're saying, you know, it's probably your entrepreneurial spirit that your church just wasn't ready for. You were probably willing to push things. And I was an evangelist in an established church. So it's not like we were on the front lines with a church plant or something where it was, you have to do evangelism to survive and just to get more people in, right? But we were in a 100-year-old church. And I think, looking back, probably they were just like, this kid, he's young and his ideas are forward thinking, we can tell, but we're just not ready for that. New board came in opposite to the board that hired me, and that new board, I think, wanted to take things in a different direction. And so I found myself without a job. I mean, we could probably spend 3 hours just talking about that story, Matt, but I think, and that's probably enough to say, I found myself without a job in Vancouver. So for American listeners, Vancouver has been attributed to the same real estate prices as Manhattan,
okay,
but our wages are similar to Cleveland. So if that helps at all, to see there's a built-in tension in this culture that we have very expensive real estate, but not high. The salaries don't reflect it. So instantly I found myself trying to figure out, what do I do? Like, we had two kids by this point, and a mortgage, and we are set up comfortably in this city that we thought we were going to spend this next, you know, decade at least, maybe two, in and setting up, reaching families. And then all of a sudden, boom, it was gone. So that was my move to ministry. It wasn't like I wasn't ticked off at the church or anything. It was just a group of people made a decision that you know, made me realize I got to find work elsewhere.
Now, I'm curious. I've been curious about this question with some of the people that we've been talking to lately. When you decided that you're going to go into vocational ministry and work as a pastor in the church, was that for you a lifelong commitment? Did you think, I'm going to go into this and I'm going to do this for the rest of my life?
Certainly thought so at the time, right? And I mean, we think all kinds of things about the future when we're stuck in the present. We think we can see and we think we know what we're going to do, but I realized that, you know, that I probably could have told that to God and he would have said, okay, yeah, that's cute that you think that's what you're going to do. And thanks for telling me. Yeah. Love chatting with you, John. But you got to be more humble than that to think that you gave me the pages to your book and it was empty. And you told me that I could write your story. Maybe you could give some input or tell me what you think would be a good story, but I have a far better story for you. Are you going to let me tell that story? Because I've got a different plan for you. That's how I interpret it now. At the time, it probably sounded very heroic to say that I was going to, you know, finish my career in ministry and my kids would be in ministry and my grandkids would be in ministry, but it just wasn't my story.
Yeah, I think a lot of times when we go into, and a lot of the people that I talk with, that they go into the ministry world without a plan B. You might say, I want to ascend the ranks from like children or youth pastor to, you know, do marriage and family or be a teaching pastor. But that, I don't know if there is like this, if we see life after ministry in that sense.
I don't think,
go ahead.
I just don't think you should have a plan B, right? I think when you're going into something and you commit to it, you shouldn't look to the right or the left or look back, right? You feel a call on God and you feel a call of God to this particular people at this particular time. And so I totally agree with you that a plan B is not on most people's radar. It's only you need to do something else when you find yourself with nothing else to do. And that's where I found myself, is what can I do? And I remember looking on Craigslist to see if there's I like cutting my own grass. Maybe there's someone to let me cut grass for all the time. But in Vancouver, it rains a lot. You know, I always say it rained twice in Vancouver last year, once for 150 days and once for 100 days. And so we only got rain twice.
There you go.
But that's not a great job to be outside. Some days it's fun, but some days it's terrible. So I was like, lawn cutting, maybe not going to be my thing.
Right. Or car washes, right?
That was the new plan B, I guess, at that point when I was scrambling.
Yeah. So, yeah, talk about the scrambling season, because we are talking to a lot of people at Pastoral Transitions about the scramble, the panic, the short runway. We hear a lot of people who will say it feels like the clock is ticking, and that's a financial motivator. We want to care for our families, but how do you figure out that day after? You didn't come out of ministry with a, like, well, I'm going to take a month off, and then I'm going to move into this new position that I've already prearranged. How do you go about figuring out what's next? Am I going to work at Starbucks or Home Depot or launch into a nonprofit? What was that journey like for you?
Man, I mean, I can just tell it honestly, but I remember telling people, the Good Shepherd has led us out of this area, and he will lead us to our next green pasture. And knowing that because I was following him and doing my best, I mean, humbly trying to follow him in the sense that I don't always know. So I'm looking on Craigslist for grass cutting jobs, but I didn't know what was around the corner. All I knew is that you have to wake up every day and trust that, you know, Jesus promises that he's gonna feed the birds and he's gonna clothe the flowers, and he's gonna do even better than that with our lives. And so that was my ultimate foundation, was to trust that he who began the good work was going to be faithful in the scrambling season, and to learn to trust him through that. So I don't get to tell people many, like, this side of the story. I'm glad that we paused and just looked at this part, because at the end of the day, I had a neighbor who was a pastor, which has never happened. Like, remember what I said about Canada and Vancouver being the great pagan north? My neighbor was an evangelical pastor of a very small church, and he knocked on my door one day. It was funny. Like, the day was weird. Like, we're talking, it was between Christmas and New Year's, and you don't talk to anybody between Christmas and New Year's unless they're immediate family, right? You're hunkered down in your home in your pajamas the whole time. He knocked on the door and said, "Can we talk?" And I said to Haley, my wife, I was like, "I think he's going to resign from his job." And sure enough, that's what he wanted to talk about. Because you just wouldn't talk to a neighbor about any, you wouldn't schedule a meeting between that time. So he's, I think you'd be a good guy for an interim job here. Maybe even take the church long term. But the problem is it was in the same denomination, just down the street from, like, I mean, down the street, like maybe 10 minutes drive. So I said, like, this is an awesome opportunity to pay the bills for a bit, but I don't feel like this is going to be our long-term thing. Like, it's a tiny little church in the denomination. I wasn't, like, the fact of what happened to us, I wasn't comfortable with the way the church could do that to a pastor, of just, you know, shoo them out based on preference. So I wasn't thrilled on the polity of the church. And so I just said, look, we'll do this for a while. You need a pastor to fill the pulpit on Sunday and to provide some sort of structure. We need a job, and that's what I do well. So I took the job, thankfully, and that gave me a runway of about 6 to 8 months, which without that, we'd be, I don't know what we would have done, but we would have done fine, because God promises to take care of us, right? So thankfully there was an interim role, and we really had to wrestle with that. Like, do we want to make this interim role, like, pursue, like, they were putting out accepting resumes for the long-term pastor. And they said, do you want to put yours in? And I said, got to think about it. But I didn't feel like that was the place, so close to where we just had this really rough experience. Yeah. And it was a much bigger church that we had come from. So we would have been running into people at the mall, at Costco for you know, decades. And we just felt like this was not the right fit. So thankfully it was a fit. It gave me 6 months to kind of, like, okay, I'm still going to preach. I'm still going to do what I know. And I'm going to find out what that next thing is. Thinking that it was probably some mega church or whatever, something in a different state or town or province or something else. I just knew that it wasn't going to be right where we were long term.
So then the entrepreneurial spirit hits you, and you decide to embrace it and run with the wind. What does that begin to look like?
I'm glad you said that, because I'd been a fan of Don Miller for a long time. My grandma at my 18th birthday gave me a copy of Blue Like Jazz when it was just coming out.
Yeah.
And said, I think you'll like this. So I love Don's writing. I love, you know, his style and his heart. And he had pivoted to the business world with building a story brand. And I read that and I thought, oh, I've been pitching apologetics ministry so wrong over all these. Cause I was trying to, like, I was kind of interested in apologetics, and I've been trying to pitch what I could do to help with, you know, youth groups and stuff. I thought that was one of the things I could maybe start up my own apologetics ministry. So I pivoted all the messaging, and I got a cheap website built. Cause I, you know, entrepreneurial. I knew how to spin up a website. So I built this website about this this series I was going to start. I was going to go around to churches and talk about doubt in the church and share my own story and how I was able to overcome doubt. And I couldn't get a single person. I couldn't get a single church to be excited. My old buddies were like, yeah, that sounds good. Or maybe we'll have you next year or something. I'm like, I actually don't have it until next year. I got to make sure that we get this thing started. And I like have a young family. So I do I really want to be traveling around all the time? And so I was like, this is not going to work. So the entrepreneurial, I tried a few things and it completely bombed on me. It didn't work. And I didn't even want it to work because I didn't want to be the next traveling superstar apologist. At that time, Ravi was falling, his life was falling apart, or at least it was coming out about how much of a mess he was. Mm. And I'd been trained by Ravi at a school in Oxford. And I thought, well, I don't want to be like this. Right. So yeah, I had to say, well, this isn't where the Good Shepherd is leading me, because I tried all the story brand principles with apologetics and it failed on me.
So you look at this and do you start to look back at ministry as a possible, like, well, I think I'll just go back to, I think about Peter after Jesus is crucified. He says, well, I guess I'll just go back to fishing and do what I know.
Yeah. Absolutely, Matt. Great question. I would have happily taken a ministry job. We were applying all over the place. I had talked to that headhunter company that finds you jobs, and they couldn't find me anything. It was just the weirdest thing because we were doing Alpha at my last church. We were growing. I thought I had success, and I couldn't find a job. My one friend, one of my best friends growing up, he says, John, I got some insider information. My dad is retiring, not far from you. And he might have a job opening up. So why don't you call him? So sure enough, I call the guy who's, you know, got a happy congregation, doesn't know he's thinking about going. I say, I hear you're near the end of your ministry cycle or your life. I don't know.
Ministry hospice. You're almost done.
would you consider early retirement so that I could have your job? And like, that was the humblest moment, most humbling moment, I should say, to have to call a guy and try to push him into early retirement, just so I could, you know, work in a church. So yeah, you said going back to fishing. That I'd never walked away from fishing in my heart. I thought I was going to continue to do ministry, but there just wasn't anything. I mean, fast forward to today after COVID, right? Seems like every church is hiring or would like someone new. But yeah, at that time, there was nothing. So
how have you made life work after vocational ministry, and what are some of the lessons that you've learned since then? Because you are an entrepreneur, you have your own business. How did you really discover that was the path that you wanted to go down?
Yeah, so this was about 7 years ago when everything was going on down, and so that's a lot of time that I've had to reflect and learn, and see that the stumbling into finding the next thing that God had for me has never stopped, Matt. It's only just been trusting that every door that I either, you know, try to open, when it's like, oh, this door is actually made of bricks. This is a brick wall. It looks like a door, but it's a brick wall. I can't get through this. Mm. I can keep trying to ram myself against it and get my family through it, but it's not a door. And then some doors are just like, this looks like a hallway, but it's actually door after door after door after door that I just coast through and I didn't even realize was there. The story is that I became a story brand guide, and that itself is a crazy story because my wife is very conservative and good with money. Like, she is so good. I'm not at all. I'll spend our family into bankruptcy if I didn't have a great woman who is holding me back, which you can imagine causes some frustrations when I really want to do something. And she's like, no, you know what? I don't think this is right. But she felt, and I felt like, giving, you know, going to Nashville for 4 days, spending a ton of things with no plan of how it was going to work. I just felt like I had to get certified as a story brand guide. And in those days, we were like the fish were just jumping into the boat at that point. Like, it was just easy fishing. The book was on its way up, like crazy excitement. And people would just read the book and say, I need a guide to work with. And then they would call me. I got my first lead. Like, my profile went live in Don's directory. I got my first lead while I was flying in the plane on the way home from Nashville. So I'm in customs, in the customs lineup to get back into my country. And I got this guy on the phone. I'm doing this sales call with him and I'm fumbling through it, but I still landed the deal because there was, you know, like the demand was so high and the supply of guides was so low at that time.
Right.
I think there's like 700 of us now, right? But so the demand is not quite what it used to be. And the supply is, you know, astronomical.
Yeah.
So you can imagine it's not great. It's harder to run a business then. But I found a niche. Maybe I could back up. That's kind of interesting. Mark Zuckerberg at this same time was announcing that he was going to change the focus of social media and make it more social. He was going to really focus on Facebook groups. So I started a group for StoryBrand when I got home, and I was like, let's just see like who's attracted to this group. It's a free group and we'll just talk about StoryBrand in the group. And there's a chiropractor from Colorado who joined, and he was like, I love StoryBrand. I see, John, what you're doing. Would you mind being a guest on a podcast, on a mastermind that I'm doing? So it's a late night Zoom call. It's after hours for everybody because they're, you know, they're busy adjusting people throughout the day. They have this time in the night. So I join and I start talking about StoryBrand and how it can help them. And next thing I know, they're inviting me to be on their podcast, and they have huge Facebook groups. And these are like influencers. These aren't just like regular chiropractors. These are chiropractic influencers. So I get invited to their Facebook group. I start helping out. I'm getting like requests in to talk about StoryBrand because they listen to the podcast. Next thing I know, I'm getting invited to speak at the chiropractic events about StoryBrand and marketing. And then I realized that I had to choose like a product. Like I couldn't just sell StoryBrand because it, you know, it's hard to develop a business around just doing consulting for that. At least it was tough for me. So I decided I was going to be the chiropractic website guy. So we'd create StoryBrand websites. And this is where Providence really, I mean, I wouldn't expect lightning to strike twice with anybody here, but my brother had a website platform that he had built from scratch. And he said, hey, why don't you build StoryBrand websites on my platform? He had just sold it off to the nonprofit, sold it off to a company. And so he said, why don't you team up with me and let's build StoryBrand websites for chiropractors? It just turns out that we were at a conference in St. Louis, ran into a company that was also from Vancouver. We actually grew up with them. So they said, well, our clients have websites that are really bad, and we think you could build great websites for them. And then we said, well, we can refer people to you. So we're both serving a similar market. We have different products. This is the playbook. If I could do this all over again, I'd say find a niche that you can serve and you can help them, and then find another partner that's going to serve that same niche, and you can do it together and refer to each other. So turns out, Matt, a few years later, we actually COVID hits and everything kind of changes, but healthcare companies, which we were a part of, start to skyrocket.
Yeah.
And this particular company got a ton of investment and they wanted to expand. And so they purchased our little, you know, startup website company. And I had my first successful exit as an entrepreneur. And that's been such an amazing thing that I'm just like, wow, I see exactly how it happened, but I stumbled through the whole thing.
Yeah.
Right. But it's just God opening up doors that I thought, I didn't even realize there were doors. It was just waking up every day and walking through the hallway of his plan for my life. And Matt, along the way, the people that I've met, the amazing opportunities that I've had to talk about who God is and my story of being in ministry and then being an entrepreneur. And it's been so cool to see how God had a plan. And, you know, I look back at that board and they were trying to do right. And they're trying to do, they're trying to do what was right for the church and what was right for their families and stuff. And I mean, it felt a little mean to, I interpreted it as a little mean, but yeah. I think of the Joseph story, and Joseph looks at these people that have done some mean things to him and says, what you intended for harm, God actually intended for good.
Yeah.
And I think that one of my favorite moments in life, it was so hard and it was stressful, and we probably have scars to prove it, but it was the best moment, was the day that board said, we don't think you're the right guy for our church going forward. And we need to do a change here. And so it wasn't lawn cutting for me, and it wasn't pastoral ministry. It wasn't church planting. It wasn't apologetics ministry. It was heading to the marketplace and taking my skills and trusting in God's provision. And, you know, we got to experience the entrepreneur's dream, which is to create a startup and to sell it to somebody who really values it for a life-changing amount. And so yeah. That's my story, Matt. And I hope it brings courage to some that are in the scramble season right now. I was there. I know how difficult it is. And I know that there's a skill set that you have that can be used by the marketplace to achieve things that you never even thought possible, to meet people that you would never have had a chance to meet in your little church there, and get opportunities and all that that you would never have even dreamed of. So
we're talking to a pastor right now who is looking for his out, and the question that he's asking us is, all I've ever been is a pastor. And if I'm not a pastor, what can I do? I don't think I have any transferable skills. I went to seminary, for goodness sake. How can any of this be taken into? What are the things that pastors don't know about what they can actually take with them if mm-hmm. if what they've done is they've preached and they've put together messages and they can, you know, what are those things that would give some encouragement and help broaden a narrowness of our horizon?
Great question. I was watching The Voice a few years ago, kind of as I was kind of interpreting, what do I have to offer the marketplace? You know, the show The Voice, you get contestants coming up and they do their best singing and they try to go through the contest, go through the challenges and come out on top.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to me that you see some of the best contestants on The Voice and they rewind to their story. And I'd say almost 9 times out of 10, they say, I learned how to sing in church. And I thought, you know, that makes sense because you have older mentors. Like if you're a young kid that can sing, you have older mentors, you have a gig. I don't want to call it a gig, but you have a gig at youth group and you have a gig on Sunday morning.
Yeah.
And nothing prepares you for live performances like having a regular gig, getting in there. You also have practices and you have all these opportunities and feedback too, right? You get tons of feedback. So it's no surprise to me that the best singers on The Voice are groomed in the church. And then I thought about my own story and I thought, you know what, there's a lot of opportunity that I had to develop skills that are transferable into the marketplace that they were being groomed in me at church and I didn't even realize it. The obvious one would be you're preparing fresh content, 40 minutes of fresh content every single Sunday. In the marketplace, that's insane, right? You put together one or two presentations a year. And some guys only have just one presentation and they can deliver it over and over and over and over again. And they get paid a crazy amount for it, far more than a Baptist honorarium. I'll just say that much. So if you can speak and you can share something that people are interested in, that communication skill is huge. Even if you're just speaking in front of a group of 30 people. How about this, like using Zoom? Like if you had to use Zoom during the pandemic for any kind of meetings, that's a skill. There's so many other. Okay, here's another one. So I got a chance to study at Oxford during my struggles of trying to figure out what I believe, and I got to study under some of the best minds in apologetics, John Lennox, Alistair McGrath, Ravi Zacharias, I thought Ravi was a big deal at the time. And they're teaching these like high level things. So I'm walking the halls of Oxford and learning these amazing scientific, philosophical, theological, and the blending of all three in contemporary culture. It's just an amazing experience. And then the program ends and I go off and I'm speaking at summer camps to junior high kids. So you have to take these complicated ideas that you've learned from some of the best minds and translate them to people who are picking their nose, flirting with girls, not interested at all. Right. And you have to find some way to make it interesting. And I just thought, oh, that's just learning about apologetics. But what I didn't realize until later was taking difficult concepts and making them simple is one of the best skills. In a world of confusion and complexity and chaos, to have somebody step into that and say, actually, I can see the patterns here and I know how to translate it to a group of people that are so desperate to understand it. I mean, Matt, in StoryBrand, you know this, right? You have people coming in and they're telling us how complicated their business is, their different products, their structure. And you're just like, and they're like, we don't have a clue what to put on our website. And people like us come in and say, actually, here's what I'm hearing. And here's how I think we could simplify that into one sentence. Or a pitch, or a slide deck, or whatever it is.
Yeah,
and that's a huge gift to churches. It's a huge gift to junior high students to be able to take complicated ideas, make them simple for them. But it's also a gift in the marketplace as well. Total transferable skills. If you've ever led a board meeting and you've been able to stand strong and project and run a, you know, a meeting and have it ended on time where people are excited about the future, that's a transferable skill. If you know how to work with employees and get them excited about the mission and grounded in, you know, this is where we're going and this is why it's important and here's why our why is noble, that's a transferable skill as well. And I could go on. I mean, notice I didn't say Greek. Like, I studied a lot of Greek and I have never had to use it ever since. Yeah. But, you know, it's okay to say a few things, like maybe learning how to learn. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
I remember
so many skills. I would hate for that guy to sell himself short, to think he has nothing to offer the marketplace.
Yeah. I remember one of my first forays into the first website I ever built and was inspired by Donald Miller was I got the site, actually still have the site. It's called don'tmessthisup.com. And realized Donald was teaching how to write. And I just remember him telling, one of the funniest things was he loved listening to people give wedding speeches, the best man speech or the maid of honor speech, and just would see how they were all over. They obviously loved the people they were giving the speech for, but just totally messed the whole thing up. And I remembered I'd given tons of speeches. I've officiated tons of weddings, and I'm at a wedding with the father of the bride just before everyone's about to walk out. And father of the bride puts his hand on my shoulder and he says, hey, pastor, don't mess this up. And you realize that this guy's just dropped $40,000 in his daughter's wedding, his only daughter's wedding, and it's on you. And if I wasn't feeling nervous up to that point, I certainly was now. I have to deliver. And when we have these moments that matter, we have to be able to communicate our heart and don't mess it up, right? So I realized, like, okay, I have this entire background of, I've been giving talks for years, right? And some of them with kids and some of it's with adults, but you have a polish and you have a way of being able to speak. And other people like that, just, they don't know how to put their ideas together. I have all of these feelings about this person. I need help organizing it and I need help delivering it. And so, you know, that birthed this thing that I was doing for a while and able to help people with that. So I think you're totally right that there are transferable skills, and want to infuse hope into this population of pastors that are just scared to move on to whatever's next or have just come out. It was forced upon them and they're just trying to figure out, I have no clue. But you have so much to be able to offer, not just in the kingdom world, but in the marketplace, which is still the kingdom world. And so yeah. I love that.
And if
that,
you're willing to learn too, right? If you're willing to learn something new, then just the skill of being adaptable and open is a hugely needed. I mean, Matt, like a year ago, no one really thought that knowing AI and using AI was a skill set.
Right.
But then some people said, this is a great opportunity. And they rolled up their sleeves and said, I'm going to learn about how to use AI. So nobody knew anything about how to use AI, like ChatGPT. And now if you could figure it out, if you knew how to if you knew how to be open, we'll say, or you were curious,
right,
then you could develop the skill set of being an AI early adopter and then an AI expert. And, and that's a skill set that you could be ahead of the marketplace right now and in huge demand.
Yeah. And the beauty is that you and I are not even actually humans talking to each other. These are our avatars that are having this conversation. Right. Nobody would ever know it, right?
Yeah. We're sitting on a beach right now in Mexico.
That's right.
And trusting our avatars to have a good conversation with people.
Yes, that's right. John, thank you for sharing your story. And you know, the question I love asking at the end of these conversations is there life after ministry? Is it any good? And do you still see that there's ministry after vocational ministry?
Yeah, Matt, I think we could definitely both share that there is a resounding yes. And those who are still in ministry, I think there's a great life in ministry. And there's so many cool things that you get to experience that I don't get to experience anymore. I haven't baptized anyone in years. I miss that completely. I haven't done an altar call. I haven't spoken at a camp where tons of kids give their life to Jesus. And I miss that. But you know what else I love is being around for my kids on Sunday morning and helping my wife get the kids to church. I love that we have, I'll just share this, a timeshare in Hawaii. And we get to go every year. I didn't get to do that before. I love that I get to be a hockey coach. One of my friends who's in ministry, he's just said, you know, John, I lament that I can't really sign up my kids for hockey because all the hockey time slots are when they're young, it's Sunday morning. And those are the times that I'm on and they need to be there. And it just wouldn't work for us. And I get to be a hockey coach and share my love of hockey with my three daughters. Now, the good news is we go to a church that has a Saturday night service. So it's not hockey or church. It's actually, you know, the blessing of being at a bigger church is that we get Saturday nights to go as a family. So obviously the income is such a gift to be able to be generous, mm-hmm. right? And we don't fight over, can we give money to this cause? It's like, no, it's a joy for us to do it. We don't fight over, do we get, you know, can we spend money on this Starbucks drink or whatever? So that just is so nice. And I have so much less gray hair just because we're not fighting over money. And for the guy that's in ministry, that's money's been tight, but you've had such other blessings in your life. You may not get to baptize people as much. You may not get to give 3-point sermons that just nail it. And everybody's coming up to you afterwards saying how great you are, but there's other blessings in that God is going to give you. And so cherish the ones that you've had so far, but look forward to what's coming next, because life doesn't end after ministry. In fact, for me, like I said, it was the best thing that could have happened, because there's so many opportunities that we have both doing ministry and just, you know, some of the perks of being in the marketplace.
That's great. You've been real generous and said, hey, if anybody wants to talk more after hearing this, that you're willing to jump in and have a conversation. How can somebody get in touch with you and see what you're doing?
About 20 years ago, my brother gave me a Christmas present, which was the weirdest Christmas present. It was johnmorrison.ca. Literally, he gave me an envelope with my name on it and said, I want to build you a website. And so we were able to secure that domain ever since. So they can just visit my website, and I probably don't update it enough, and there's probably things that I could share more on it, but at least you can find me on it, and there's a button that you can just reach out and share your story, and if we can connect and I can help you in some way, that'd be awesome. Also, any resource that I've ever made is there. I try to keep as many things free and generous as possible, but you can learn more about what I've been doing and some of the resources I've created on that site.
John, thanks for coming on Life After Ministry podcast. Thanks for sharing your story. We pray that that goes out and it encourages everybody who's listening. So thanks for coming on. As we wrap up today's conversation with John Morrison on trusting the Good Shepherd, it's really clear that navigating transitions, especially out of vocational ministry, is less about the uncertainty of our steps and more about the certainty of the voice that we follow. If today's episode resonates with you, if you know somebody who's in the midst of searching, maybe they're even panicking about what's next, we are here to help guide them back to the voice of the shepherd. Really, the Life After Ministry podcast is the loving arm that's trying to tell the story of pastors and leaders in the Christian world coming out of ministry, trying to figure out what's next. And that's our heart. Feel free to share this episode and encourage somebody to listen. It might be the very thing that they need in a moment of doubt, and it's a reminder that they're not alone in this journey. And if you're moved to support further, then consider making a donation in their name. Your generosity allows us to walk alongside more people who are coming out of ministry and helping them to discern the shepherd's call in their next chapter. So you can make a donation. You can go to pastoraltransitions.com and you'll see a button that says donate. And that will be a nonprofit donation. You'll be able to have a tax deduction there, and you'll be able to help us as we're helping others. Thanks for joining us today. And remember, even in the midst of transition, the Good Shepherd is always leading us. Shalom.